would be late tomorrow into the evening.
Are you ready?
To First Amendment Friday on the Lars Larson Show.
Happy Friday.
Friday is for everybody.
Today, Lars puts you in the driver's seat. You talk about what you want to talk about.
Government is the problem.
No topic is off limits.
I'm your lying dog-faced pony soldier.
Call 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-HEY-LARS.
Crank that speaker.
Thank goodness it's Friday. Happy Friday.
This is
First Amendment Friday with Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Are you ready for the coming Northwest power blackouts? I got a few things to say about that because this week we got some new information about just how close we are to blackouts and brownouts in the Pacific Northwest. They are going there, or we are going there, because I'm in the same group you're in, that we've got electric power, and electric power has been plentiful in the Northwest, in large part to hydropower. The problem is, we don't have any more of it to any great degree coming online. And in fact, the greenies are threatening to take a bunch of Northwest hydropower and take it offline. And that's going to leave us probably in the dark. I'll give you the proof of that in just a second. First, though, welcome to First Amendment Friday on the Radio Northwest Network. It's a pleasure to always do the show every day of the week. But on First Amendment Fridays, we open up the phone lines. We look out for those naysayers that may come to the head of the line at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And you can also vote in our Twitter poll. The poll on X today, I made this one Portland specific. Sometimes we have them that are Seattle specific, or Yakima, Tri-Cities, Spokane, the whole Northwest region that we've served for the last quarter century. But this one is so crazy that people even talk about it around the country. Portland passed quite some time ago what's called an arts tax. It's not a gigantic tax. It's a few dozen dollars. But I'm not diminishing that. When the government comes to you and says, we want you to pay, and then they can't even collect the money, and they don't spend the money very well. Well, Portland's arts tax deadline comes due on Monday. Will you pay? There is a huge percentage of the people who are technically supposed to pay the tax who do not. If I still lived in the city of Portland, I wouldn't pay it, and that would be my point of view. For those of you who are in that region, are you going to pay this ridiculous tax? Now, I've always said that the best way to get rid of anything, a bad law, a bad tax, a bad policy, the best way to get rid of it is to strictly enforce it. Except Portland seems to be satisfied with simply saying, yeah, we've got this tax. Some people pay, some people don't. We don't make a tremendous effort to try to collect from them, because I think my personal theory is that the city of Portland understands if they ever strictly enforced this ridiculous arts tax, the public would revolt and they would demand that it be removed altogether. So they're happy to simply collect as many dollars as they can possibly get and let all the people who've decided not to pay, the people I endorse, let them simply get away with it. So Portland's arts tax deadline comes Monday. Will you pay the bill? As I said, if I still lived in the city of Portland and I lived there for a couple of decades, I would not pay that bill. Today's poll on X is brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at ultimatetruckservice.com. Now, yesterday, I asked you this question. Should Joe Biden take up President Trump's challenge to debate? I said yes. 95% of you said yes. Only 5% of you said no. How many Democrats out there are going to say to themselves, I'm going to vote for Joe Biden, even though the guy is a coward and he won't show up and answer questions from reporters and he won't get on a debate stage with his opponent? He's always telling you how bad Donald Trump is. If he's that bad, Joe, mount that stage. Get up there and show us just how smart you are and how dumb and evil Donald Trump is. And if you don't believe that, because you know that Donald Trump would intellectually mop the floor with your sorry backside, I'll tell you what, then just get out of the race altogether. Let Kamala Harris run instead, or some other joke of a Democrat. But let me get back to the power blackouts, because if I make a charge that says we are headed for power blackouts in the Pacific Northwest, I would fully expect that you would demand, Lars, you better back that up and back it up with some solid proof. Well, even if you didn't believe my warnings over the last decade, and most of that came from both the utility companies and from the Northwest Power Planning Council. Well, the Northwest Power Planning Council just had its last meeting on Tuesday. That's the government agency whose number one job, their only job really, is keeping the lights turned on in the Northwest. And why do I have to have a government agency to do that? Well, there are a lot of players. There are all the industries that use electricity. There are all the consumers like me and you that use electricity. There are all the privately owned utilities. There are the publicly owned utilities. You got all of that. And then, of course, you got all the greenies out there who are saying, let's not make power with the things we know how to make power with. Let's make it with windmills and solar panels, which are not meeting the need. Let me tell you what they heard at this meeting on Tuesday. So, on Tuesday, the Northwest Power Planning Council found that they are short 4,000 megawatts of electricity. And by the way, their staff warned them that does not include 1,600 megawatts of brand new demand that just came on in the last couple of weeks. That is server farms to make sure that your Amazon, your Instagram, your Twitter, and your Facebook keeps running. Now, if you want to know, well, how much is 5,600 megawatts? That would be five brand new full-size nuclear power plants or five brand new lower Snake River dams. The only problem is there are no nuclear power plants on the way at this point, and there are no new dams on the way at this point. In fact, the global warming true believers want to rip all of the Snake River dams out. That would take away 8% of the region's power. So if we're already short almost 6,000 average megawatts, and you take another 8% away, you can imagine where that leaves us. They want the 10 coal plants that currently push kilowatts in the Northwest region from other states like Montana and Wyoming. They want those coal plants shut down and gone. Natural gas currently generates 20% of the region's electricity. The greenies say that's got to go as well. They say natural gas is just as evil as oil or coal. How about wind turbines? I bet you're thinking, wind turbines, that'll do the deed. Well, the average wind turbine produces 3 megawatts. So we're going to need a couple of thousand more of them than we have already. And the wind, by the way, only blows about 1/3 of every day on average. So triple that number up. Maybe take it up to 6,000 new windmills. And where exactly are you going to put them? Have you noticed lately that anybody who's in favor of windmills, who has one put in his backyard, says, no, I want windmills. Just don't put them in my backyard. And if you think that forcing everybody in the Northwest to electrify their homes, to give up natural gas heat, natural gas cooking, natural gas hot water, force everybody to electrify and switch over to battery cars, if you think that's going to help our situation, think again. Me, I've got plenty of gasoline, batteries, and candles. And you thought it was the jihadis who are going to take us back to the 14th century? No, it's the greens of Ecotopia, the folks who live here in the Pacific Northwest. And by the way, PGE, Portland General Electric, just requested a 7.5% increase next year. That will boost the total cost of electricity from PGE territory to 40% more than 2022. Do you understand why we're in trouble now? It's First Amendment Friday. It's the Radio Northwest Network, and the Northwest Nonsense is coming up next on the Lars Larson Show.
Want to be at. This is the Lars Larson Show.
That makes a lot of sense. A lot of nonsense.
Right. You're bloody well right. You know he's right to say. sick.
This is the Northwest Nonsense.
How much longer do we have to sit for this nonsense?
That great moment every day where Lars brings you the cold, hard facts without any liberal wokeness from the Daily Dead fish wrapper or mainstream media bias.
Exactly how often does a Northwest government, in this case a city, get the chance to save $2 billion without even breaking a sweat? Not very often, I would guess. Well, here it is. 7 years ago, Portland got concerned about cryptosporidium in its drinking water. Now, crypto, by the way, is a tiny, tiny little parasite that could have you sitting on your toilet for the next few days. So they looked for ways to fix it and, by the way, meet some federal regulations. Experts told the rocket scientists down on the Portland City Council that it really came down to two major choices. A water filtration plant at an estimated $350 to $500 million, or using ultraviolet light at less than one third of the cost of the cheapest filtration plant. Which one did they choose? Are you kidding me? This is the government. They went for the most expensive option. After all, it ain't their money. Why should they care? Big expensive projects make lots of jobs for private companies and union workers who tend to remember politicians much better at election contribution time if they've been recently cashing big paychecks. In the last 7 years, inflation has gone up, to be sure, up about 8% during President Trump's 4 years in office. And I kid you not, 22% in 3 years under Joe Biden. Do the math on that one. So a 30% jump in inflation should have pushed the cost from the top end estimate, $500 million, to maybe as high as $650 million. But remember, this is a government project we're talking about here. The current price tag, I kid you not, $2.13 billion, or about 450% more expensive than the estimate just 7 years ago. Don't even try that inflation excuse on that one. And city council member Mingus Maps, I'd make up a funny name for him, but he's already there, who we keep inviting on the show, and he doesn't have the guts to come on and take the questions that one would naturally ask about this kind of thing. Mingus warns the project is almost certain to go up in cost even more. Higher than $2.13 billion? What are you shooting for, 500% inflation? Or they could go back to the ultraviolet light system. Even if it has doubled in cost in the last 7 years, it still saves water ratepayers a cool $2 billion. Just like that, and no nasty crypto viruses in your water. Anybody want to bet that City Hall chooses the less expensive option that shorts its friends and the unions and the construction companies? Because I'd take that bet all day long. Our question of the day from Jim. Lars, reading my local e-letter on the mountain biking NWTA. There's a small blurb in there about a new REI coming to the Beaverton area. We already have one in Hillsborough. Any thoughts as to why Beaverton, when Portland Place closed up its shop, its REI store? Signed, Jim. Absolutely. Downtown Portland's dangerous. Downtown Portland is crime and violence and vandalism and everything else. If I'd been running REI, I'd have closed down the Portland store too. And now today's Daily Grill.
Insane.
Are you
ridiculous.
They get more and more ridiculous.
Flat out dumb.
You're even dumber than I thought.
Who deserves today's Lars Grill of the Day?
Maybe they're just really, really stupid.
Find out right now.
I'm going to give today's Daily Grill to the Salem Kaiser School. So what do? They settle a potential teacher strike by agreeing to pay the teachers more money than they know that they have. And now guess what? They're going to cut literally hundreds of people from the Salem Kaiser Public Schools. So they're telling parents, we're going to take that money you gave us to educate your kids. We're going to pay the teachers who currently are failing to educate your kids. And I use the school district's own numbers to prove that. And then we're going to pay them even more money for doing a bad job. And we're going to fire a bunch of teachers and other staff members. And your kids are going to end up getting less. But the unionized teachers will get more. And isn't that the point of the public education system? Not about educating your kids. It's about making sure the public payrolls stay fat, and hence the donations to the Democrat Party. Today's best email comes from Steve in Bellevue. Hey, Lars. These days, I don't even trust my credit union. Right after you on KVI this morning, John Carlson talked to the Renton police chief. The juvenile crime up here is way out of control. They all have guns, and nobody's doing anything about these kids. Last night, coming out of a Safeway at 10 o'clock at night with a few groceries, I had to be on my toes. You never know when somebody's going to come up and try and jack your car. I carry a Smith & Wesson 351 PD 22 Mag 7 shot, which is all I need right now. If things get dicey up here, I can always carry two of them because they don't weigh too much. Signed, Steve in Bellevue. It's First Amendment Friday. Let's go right to your calls and start with a naysayer. Bert, welcome to the program. God bless the naysayers out there. What do you and I disagree about today?
Well, Lars, generally speaking, I agree with you on just about everything, but this one's the last couple of days I've heard two things that I've disagreed with you on.
Okay.
The first one was this morning. You opened the show with advocating not paying a tax, and yep. I felt that, you know, if we're going to be consistent in our values, we need to have our values. We're either going to be law-abiding citizens or we're not. And if we're advocating for people to break the law, which is not paying a tax would be breaking the law, it's tantamount to when I get passed by a state trooper or a county sheriff or a city police and I'm driving the speed limit and they're obviously going over the speed limit without chasing anybody. They're just driving in excess.
That'd be a double standard. Hey, Bert, I got a question. Do you think you hold all American values?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Do you remember how our country got...
Old American values, okay?
All American
values. But yeah.
Well, but all or old, either way. Do you remember how our country got started? Did we have a fight over that?
Yes, we did.
And what's said to have tipped it off? Do you remember a Tea Party of any kind?
Yeah, but it started well before the Tea Party.
No, I know it did. There were a lot of people that were aching under the yoke of Great Britain and all that. But you always have some kind of signature event. It could be the incident at Concord Green. It could also be because Americans said, hey, all these people are passing these crazy taxes. We're not going to pay. Do you remember that?
Yes, I do.
Is that an all-American value?
It is, except that there were years of letters and diplomacy efforts had taken place first. And
you know what they told us? Do you know what they told this country?
They told us,
they said, tough luck, pay the tax anyway, we say so, right?
Yes, exactly.
Okay, is that what City Hall Portland is doing with the arts tax?
I understand the sentiment, and I understand that, but I also understand that we walk a fine line when we do things which are apparently hypocritical, whether they are or they aren't.
Is civil disobedience a proud American tradition?
Civil disobedience?
Yeah, civil disobedience. And I always have, I mean, literally for 30 years, I've said to people, you want to go occupy a senator's office or camp out on the front lawn of City Hall, whatever, you have to be prepared to pay the consequence, which might be, unless you're a J6 protester, it's a ticket for trespass. But civil disobedience has a proud legacy in America. Would you agree?
So long as it remained civil.
Yeah, and he's simply saying, you want me to pay a $35 arts tax, I'm not paying. Is anybody's life endangered by that?
No, it is not.
Does it destroy anybody's property?
No, it does not.
Does it leave a mark?
It does and it doesn't, the same way.
Well, how does it do it? Because you're not handing over lots of cash to the city that then spends much of the cash just collecting the cash. And allegedly, they buy some crayons and drawing paper for kids. In theory, I'm just saying, if you're saying you want to be all American, you want to hew to American traditions, civil disobedience is a great one.
The Lars Larson Show. Broadcasting from his socially distanced bunker to yours, it's Sanitized Entertainment. Here's Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm always glad to get your calls, especially on a First Amendment Friday. And I can understand why a crazy transit agency like TriMet or Seattle's Metro kind of nonsense, but they just sent out a press release, and I want to read it to you. Nobody likes being stuck in traffic. For bus riders, however, TriMet has a workaround. In partnership with the city's transportation bureau. We're going to make it easier for buses to move through intersections and past heavy traffic, meaning all of you and I, the ones that are paying the bill. That means riders can reach their destination faster on the bus. They're going to use a technology to have a bus-only traffic signal. And in other words, while you're still stuck at the red light, the bus, the one you paid for, the one the people riding it did not pay for, that bus gets to go ahead and you get to sit and wait. Now, does that sound right to you? You know, having the buses have priority over all those nasty citizens who actually pay for the streets and pay for the buses, and TriMet and Metro and all the other transit agencies are running incredibly inefficient systems where the cost per rider mile is absolutely, it knock your socks off. And I'll tell you about it later if you want. Let's go to Marty. Hey, Marty, it's First Amendment Friday. What's on your mind?
I have a friend who happens to be, you know, a part of that ecotopia. And, you know, I've tried to explain to them how it's wrong and how they're stealing our energy. And I just can't put it into words. If you could go on about how these greenies are stealing our power and spew some facts that they can understand, I just can't put myself into words.
Well, try it this way, Marty. Every single country on earth has to have energy to run. And modern economies like America, we take a great amount of energy. In fact, America consumes about a quarter of the oil that's produced every year on earth. And you say, well, that's a lot. We also produce about 25% of the manufactured goods in the world. And we're probably we're 5% of the world's population. So we're 5%. And you say, well, that's wrong. Oh, you say, okay, great. How fast would you like to go back to the 14th century? Because it's easy to do. I mean, there are countries like Venezuela that used to be very wealthy, and now they're desperately poor to the point where people can barely feed themselves. And you say, how is that possible when they have, well, corruption is one way, and in this case, it's eco-corruption. So, like I started the show today, you've got the power council whose job it is to keep the lights turned on. And that's not just lights at your house and my house. It's keeping all of the businesses and the industries where most of us make our living working as well. If the power goes out, those industries go away and the income that it produces with it. So when they say we're short of power, and you say, okay, then let's not turn off some of the coal-fired electric plants that we're currently using. No, coal is evil. Got to get rid of it. How about nuclear? No, the greenies think nuclear is evil, too. And ask your friends, when the official agency in charge of keeping the lights turned on is telling you we're going to be almost 6,000 megawatts short, and I put that, I had one guy write to me and say, how many houses is that? I always hear reporters make that comparison. I think it's a dumb comparison because I told you, well, that's enough power for 400,000 houses. That doesn't tell you anything. What does tell you something is, well, how many lower Snake River dams would it take to equal the amount of power we're short right now? And the answer is 5 lower Snake River dams or 5 brand new full size old school nuclear power plants. And you say, okay, but we're not going to make the power.
Her argument was that why don't we just hook up car batteries and use that for the 6,000 megawatts of missing power?
Yep.
I'm like these greenies.
These are people who have no concept of the math. You know what you should do, Marty? If they're saying to you, why, I think we could get by on half the power that we currently get by on. Well, the 15th is Monday, right? Go to your friend's house, walk to the main breaker box, and turn off the main power switch at the top. It's not going to hurt anything. It just turns off all the power to the house. And say, if you think you can get by on half as much, we're halfway through the month, I'll tell you what, I'll come back in 2 weeks and turn your power back on and see how you get by with half as much power. Because that's what she's talking about. And all these people who want everybody, oh, people should conserve. Great. Why don't you turn your power off? No. I want everybody else to conserve. I want my life to stay the same. I mean, when you listen to most of these advocates, Greta Thunberg and idiots like this, they'll fly in on a jet to give you a speech about how you should use fewer fossil fuels. They'll ride up in a limousine, you know, and, you know, a president or a senator or the energy czar, John Kerry, formerly former energy czar. He'll tell you all day long, you know, how you should use less power. And then he goes home to a mansion that probably consumes five times the power that your house does or my house does. You got to put it in personal terms. If you make it personal to them, okay, how much of your energy life are you willing to give up? And when they don't say, well, I don't want to give up anything. Do you know when they've done public opinion research and they've said global warming is going to kill planet Earth? And even if you, I don't buy that, but there are people who believe it. You say, okay, how much are you willing to give up personally to fix the climate? Do you know the majority answer is $10 a year? That's what the majority says when they're asked, okay, you want people to give up energy? How much will you give up? $10. Let's go to Jerry, who's another naysayer. Hey, Jerry, welcome to the program. What do you and I disagree about that makes you a naysayer?
Well, I'm not sure if I understand completely what I might be naysaying about, but the water...
That's often true of naysayers, but that's okay. You're in the right club. You're in the right club.
Yeah. Yes. And most of the time, I'm a long-time listener, first-time caller.
Thank you.
I normally agree with you completely, but the water treatment for Portland, I think it was?
Yeah.
Yeah. I actually work in the water treatment stuff down here in Eugene area.
Yeah, but you're on the outflow part of it, aren't you?
Well,
you treat sewage,
water,
right?
I have in the past.
Oh no, yep. No. But what we're talking about drinking water and washing water. Yep. We're talking about the water supply, yep. And they want to build a plant that 7 years ago we were told was going to cost a maximum of $500 million. The current estimate is $2 billion. But they said you could do the same thing with UV treatment of the water. And this was their experts telling them, and it would cost 20% of that amount to get the same result. You've got cryptosporidium. It's not a bacteria. It's not a virus. It's a parasite. If the parasite gets in your guts, it'll make you sit on the toilet. It could hurt you badly. It could, I suppose, in some cases even kill you. So you gotta get the crypto. Now, we've never actually had a crypto infection in decades and decades of using the Portland water. So would you rather use the $500 million solution or the $100 million solution?
Well, the more expensive solution, if it's the one I'm thinking of, is chlorination probably.
No, and it's filtration. And by the way, Jerry, most water treatment is treatment. And just for everybody, we're going to get wonky, but Jerry's in the business. Treatment means you take a bunch of water and you add chemicals, you add other things, and you treat the water. Sometimes you can make stuff precipitate out, and it makes the water safe, especially toilet water. Filtration is filtration. They want to build a now $2 billion filtration plant when they could treat it with UV light for about 10% of that amount. Does that make sense to you?
I was thinking, because I didn't get clarification on what kind of plant they were doing.
This is drinking water. That's why I said they're worried about water that if crypto gets into it, could leave you on the toilet. Now, I assume nobody in Eugene is, as hippy-dippy as they are, nobody in Eugene is drinking sewage. But in your drinking water, if you get crypto, you're going to get sick to your gut. So would you rather have, quickly, $500 million or $100 million?
The $100 million, yeah.
Yeah, I would think so. That would be my choice, but then I don't work in government. If I worked in government, it'd be whatever makes the unions and the construction companies happy. Back in a moment, you're listening to the Lars Larson Show.
Lars. Podcast every show at LarsLarson.com.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. This segment brought to you by 540Training.com. Concealed carry, home invasion defense, personal defense online at 540Training.com. Our X poll today. Portland's arts tax deadline comes Monday. Will you pay? There is a huge number of people who do not pay. I don't happen to live in the city of Portland, so I'm not obligated to pay it. And frankly, the city spends a gigantic amount of money of the money they collect, collecting the money. In other words, it sounds like just a giant waste of time machine where you collect money, spend a whole bunch of it on collecting the money, and a little bit of it filters down to actual arts. But will you pay? If I lived in the city of Portland, I would not. Today's Poll on X is brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at ultimatetruckservice.com. On this First Amendment Friday, Manny, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Oh, hi, Lars. I just wanted to comment on the UV bite subject that you were talking about earlier.
About treating the water instead of building a giant filtration plant for $2 billion, use UV light at maybe $100 to $200 million instead. They were both offered as options for City Hall. City Hall decided to take the more expensive option.
Well, in my experience, I used to be a subcontractor with the Los Angeles Department of Water and Power, and they went through this whole progression of treatment with regard to filtration of the aqueduct water coming down into the city, and then they went to chlorinization, then ammonization. But what they finally ended up doing was a pilot project to implement UV light in the process. And they ended up, it was so successful that the engineers decided to go with the UV as the treatment.
And by the way, when you say the aqueduct, are you talking about those big pipes that you see going up one side of the hill on the grapevine? I mean, the ones that are like 20 feet in diameter or something?
Yeah, it comes down from there, and then it goes into the Van Orman Dam system, goes into the, and then it goes out throughout the system. So
you got one of the biggest water systems in the United States, and they figured out that UV treatment of the water was better than a giant filtration plant. I think that's great. That's a great piece of evidence.
That's where they ended up. Yeah, with the UV, it was so. They started with a pilot program with a small facility, and then it was so successful that they expanded on that, and it worked out pretty well for them.
Good. Well, I'm going to throw that into my tool bag of evidence. Manny, thanks very much. Let's go to Don in Bellingham, listening on KGMI and the Radio Northwest Network. Don, what's on your mind today?
Lars, they would just take that and they would sink it in the research for preventing pregnancies in men. So they're lost no matter what they do. Look, you were talking about the blackouts and brownouts earlier.
Yep.
Blackouts you can deal with. Brownouts are extremely dangerous for fires in your house. Anything with a compressor, refrigerator, freezer, air conditioner, that compressor is going to try and work that much harder to reach that temperature you have it set at.
And it'll raise the temperature of all the electrical components in it, and it actually has the potential to make fires, doesn't it?
It does. It doesn't have the potential. It does do that.
Which means
I've seen it in the hurricanes in Texas.
Well, Don, think about this then. You've got the Power Planning Council, not Lars Larson, but the Power Planning Council saying we are 5,600 megawatts short. And like I said, that's equivalent to what it would take five full-size nuclear plants to produce or five lower Snake River dams. And we don't have it. So when we get to that point where they say, hey, it's a cold winter, or it's a warm summer and demand is hitting a peak and we're short of power, it makes the choice very clear. They're going to probably choose to black out an area instead of simply trying to brown out and ride it through, which is smart and it's safer, but it means they're going to have to choose which part of the region gets blacked out altogether and for how long.
Go to their homes and see if they have Generac generators.
Well, and they probably do. And Don, that's the thing. They're walking us into this problem. And I've been warning people about this, and I've been using the Northwest Power Planning Council. So I'm not going to some crazy conservative source or, you know, tinfoil hat site on the internet. I'm saying they have this idea, and it's called LOLP, loss of load probability. And you say, what does that mean? Loss of load means blackout. And they say, well, what's the probability? About 5 years ago, the probability was 2 or 3%. So it was relatively small. You'd have to have a collision of a hot summer, low water, you know, cold winter, whatever. And you get all those things coming together in, at one time, and you get loss of load, meaning somebody gets blacked out. Well, they wanted to ride it below 5% always. They said, that's our benchmark. It has to, it's like why, when I used to have an old car, I'd say, well, I can probably let the radiator get to 200 degrees, but when it hits 212 or 220, I better pull over to the side of the road and let it cool off. There's a point where you have to say, we're there. They wanted to keep the loss of load probability below 5. It is now 7, and it's on its way to 30.
The only cure for liberalism is consequences.
Well, then let's take the most liberal districts of Portland, Seattle, Eugene, the Tri-Cities, and Spokane, and turn their lights out for a couple of days and say, is this what you want, or would you like to leave some of those coal-fired plants in Wyoming and Montana producing power? I think you'd wake them up pretty quickly. It's like that old Frank Rizzo saying, a conservative is a liberal who got mugged last night. It's First Amendment Friday on the Radio Northwest Network.
The Lars Larson Show. To First Amendment Friday on the Lars Larson Show.
Happy Friday.
Friday is for everybody.
Today, Lars puts you in the driver's seat. You talk about what you want to talk about.
Government is the problem.
No topic is off limits.
You're a lying dog-faced pony soldier.
Call 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-HEY-LARS.
Crank that speaker. Thank goodness it's Friday. Happy Friday.
Friday.
This is
First Amendment Friday with Lars Larson.
I'm dead serious about this, but I want to know, do you think that the average American thinks the government should have a warrant if it wants to spy on an American citizen? I tend to be one of those people who thinks, yeah, if you want to spy on an American, even if you think you have a really good reason, you need a warrant. Well, guess what, folks? We just got sold out once again today on Capitol Hill. There was a group of conservatives who said, we're not voting for that FISA, Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act reauthorization, unless you say, if you're going to surveil Americans, you have to have a warrant. That is, you have to have gone to a judge and said, we believe that there is evidence of a crime. We believe that this American is involved in criminal activity or terrorism or whatever. You've got to convince a judge there's a reason to violate the Fourth Amendment protections of rights that American citizen had given to him by God. And apparently a bunch of Republicans said, no, we don't need that. We'll go ahead and let them keep on spying on Americans. Now, that's my point of view. I want to get the point of view of John Daniel Davidson. You've heard him on the show before, but he's a senior editor of The Federalist and the author most recently of a great book called Pagan America, The Decline of Christianity and the Dark Age to Come. Kind of gloomy, but that's okay. We need to be warned. John Daniel Davidson, welcome back.
Hey, thanks for having me.
How come we got sold out today?
Well, as you say, a group of Republicans wanted some really reasonable reforms to a program that has been abused for years and years. And Speaker Mike Johnson and the members of the Intelligence Committee sold out the American people. And the excuse that they use is the excuse that they've always used, is that we need the FBI to be able to do this warrantless surveillance on Americans for our own safety. To keep us protected from bad actors and to disrupt terrorist plots and blah, blah, blah. We've heard it all before. What's new, and the reason that you're seeing a number of Republicans sort of defect from the status quo and demand these protections, is that, you know, in recent years it's come to light just how pervasive FBI warrantless spying on Americans has become. In 2021, the FBI pinged the NSA database and conducted searches on Americans 3.4 million times. And a third of those times were non-compliant.
Meaning they didn't even meet the letter of the law, the requirement to actually do that surveillance.
That's right, yeah. I mean, in layman's terms, they were illegal. But yes, in federal bureaucratic jargon, they were non-compliant, which means they didn't follow the normal rules and procedures. That's about a million people. So, I mean, the abuse of this is clear. It's in the public record. We've known about it for a couple years now, and yet we can't even get Republican lawmakers to agree to really basic reforms of this FISA law.
And by the way, I'm talking to John Daniel Davidson. I thought you wrote a bang-up piece for the Federalist on this. And you said, if I remember correctly, you said they really made a joke of it by saying, oh, we promise we're going to put the FBI agents through some new training programs and tell them, here are the things you're not allowed to do. And you say, it's laughable. You say, these guys violated the rights of Americans 3 million times, but if we put them through a couple of corrective courses, they'll completely change. Is that what we're offered up by Mike Johnson?
Yeah, sort of meaningless tweaks like that. That are really meant to avoid the real reforms that some Republicans were asking for. Not just that the FBI has to get a warrant to obtain permission to spy on Americans, but also to close something called the data broker loophole, which allows our intelligence agencies to just buy mass amounts of data from these data brokers that they collect on us when we go online and when we use our apps and when we engage in social media, and that they record our keystrokes and all sorts of massive amounts of metadata that government surveillance and spy agencies buy from third party brokers. And they can do this with sort of impunity. They don't need a warrant. They don't need any oversight to do this. And it's a really common practice. Some lawmakers in both Republicans and Democrats were hoping to close that loophole as well. So the warrants and the closing the data broker loophole were the two big reforms that were sort of, you know, being negotiated. And Speaker Johnson basically shut both of them down and offered these ridiculous fig leaf tweaks like the one you just described.
I'm talking to John Daniel Davidson from The Federalist. He's the senior editor there. And so why is it this even being presented as these 19 weirdos who went out and made all these crazy demands, they were out of line, and the rest of the Republican Party is saying, no, we're completely in favor of allowing FISA to continue to surveil Americans, or to allow agencies under FISA to surveil Americans without a warrant. They're acting as though the whole Republican Party, except a few outliers, are the sensible folks. And they even refused to adopt an amendment. That was voted, I think, today before they did the final vote. And they said, how about this? If you're going to end up including Americans in your surveillance, you got to get a warrant. And that got voted down by a Republican House.
Yeah, I know. I think that we have to come to terms with the fact that the Republican Congress, as it's currently constituted, isn't really on the side of the Constitution, isn't really on the side of freedom for Americans and protection against a hostile government. You know, the reason that there was 3.4 million searches by the FBI of this NSA database that had to do with Americans in 2021, the reason is because of 2020. It's because of January 6th. It's because of what they believed was like Russian cyber attacks and Russian misinformation. It was all in the name of protecting quote-unquote democracy. When you look at the number of queries to those databases before and after, much lower. So, you know, your listeners can draw conclusions what they will from that. But clearly, I think, these powers are being used by the federal intelligence agencies to weaponize against what they view as dangerous political opinions, which in an earlier era would have just been normal dissent from certain mainstream narratives, maybe about the 2020 election, maybe about COVID,
maybe
whatever it is.
Yeah. By the way, if the headline writer got it right, you actually draw the conclusion. I don't want people to miss this. FISA reform failed because the whole point was to spy on Americans. So the FISA isn't really the FISA. It's the Spying on Americans Act.
Yeah, that's the other thing that we have to come to terms with. These programs were sold to us after 9/11 as a way to keep Americans safe from foreign terrorists, right? And that we were told we had to be able to collect this information to detect and interdict foreign terrorist plots. And we were assured, oh, we're not going to spy on Americans. This is just for foreigners, jihadists, right, overseas, so that another 9/11 doesn't happen. Well, at the time, some people warned, look, if you create these powers, if you create this surveillance apparatus, it's a very dangerous thing because eventually it will be turned on the American people. Those voices were ignored, and we went ahead and created a massive global surveillance apparatus, and sure enough, 20 years later, it's being turned on the American people and weaponized against us.
Absolutely. absolutely right. His new book is called Pagan America, the Decline of Christianity and the Dark Age to Come. He's John Daniel Davidson from The Federalist. John Daniel, it's always a pleasure. We'll be back in a moment. You're listening to The Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network. Contact us today at OregonGunLaw.com.
Email talk at LarsLarson.com. He actually reads them. More with Lars right now.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. I've got to talk about this in a moment, but I want to take some calls first because it is First Amendment Friday. So welcome to First Amendment Friday. But Georgia has a brand new law against ballot trafficking, and it's completely sensible. And yet they're in court right now, and the state is having to defend its brand new law in federal court because, of course, the folks who want to cheat, that would be the Democrat Party, say you can't make that a requirement. I mean, I'll give you the details in just a moment, but you're not going to believe it. To your calls, though, first on this First Amendment Friday at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk at LarsLarson.com. Let me go first to Ron. Hey, Ron, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
I'm going to hit you with two things. One, when we took out the dam in Centralia, Washington, not the dam, but the coal power plant that was clean, efficient, cleaner than China's by far, and we also took out the dams down in southern Oregon, down at Cave Falls, and you had the Boardman dam that they took out. That was over 12,000 megawatts of power. They created this crisis.
1,200 is more likely, but yeah.
Well, 1,200, but
yeah, it's a lot of power.
At the same time, Lars, it seemed like even looking at the bill that they, on the FISA deal, get into that also.
Yeah, I was curious what you said about FISA. How is it unreasonable to say if they want to go out and go after a bunch of crazy jihadis that are trying to attack America, foreign intelligence surveillance, go for it? How does that get turned into something in which Americans can be spied on?
Basically, the Obama administration, anything you can get around using the third party and everything else, using even before the election in 2020 to go through and spy on us, whether we disagree with whatever subjects, because they might consider you a threat, me a threat, because, we're conservative and everything else.
That's what they're going to do.
This is right out of the book of Marxism. This is right out of the book.
Okay, but hold on. As much as I like to blame Obama for all the terrible things he did and Joe Biden as well, we've got to be realistic about this and hold our own party feet to the fire. And that is, you've got Republicans who had the chance. There were 19 of them who said it's not reasonable to do surveillance of people. If some of those people are Americans, you need to get a warrant. And those 19 are now being cast as the renegade crazies. And the rest of the Republican Party, 200 of them or so in the House of Representatives, said, no, it's perfectly okay to spy on Americans. I'll blame Obama for everything he did and Joe Biden the same. But what about the Republicans who would vote for the idea of surveillance on Americans without a warrant? That's the big problem, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And we hit the nail right on the head, Lars, is that they want to comply and go along and get along and be sheep and comply to our own Auschwitz or our own World War II. I pray that doesn't happen. But this is not liberty. To go through and to just say, we're going to just go ahead and turn a blind eye, give FISA all the powers to undermine people's privacies and everything else, no different than the registries for that we found out in Virginia a couple of years ago that the FBI was keeping without even the people knowing.
Yep. What they're trying to do on the ATF. All of that stuff, it has to stop. And if it doesn't stop, then we're not a free country anymore. And that means they'll have violated the Constitution. I mean, one of the most basic things in there, your Fourth and other amendment rights against search and seizure, unreasonable intrusion. And when they wrote into somebody's papers, in modern terms, that means surveilling you electronically, looking at your electronic records, all of that should be off limits without a warrant. And if they can get a warrant, if they can go to a judge and say, judge, there's probable cause to believe that this person is involved in something criminal, the judge can grant a warrant. But if they can't get a warrant, if they say the FBI and the CIA and all these other alphabet agencies say we need to have the power to do surveillance on American citizens without getting a warrant, it's because they're doing something that they know is wrong. And if you give them that power, it will be used for political purposes. I would remind you that both the CIA and the FBI did surveillance on Donald Trump's campaign before he even became the Republican nominee in the summer of 2016. And you say, well, why were they surveilling volunteers on his campaign, people like Carter Page, George Papadopoulos, and others? Why would they do that? Because it was being used to achieve a political outcome. Now, I want to get back to this Georgia law for a moment, but it's a reminder. Today's a First Amendment Friday. If you want to join in, it's 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And by the way, in Georgia, imagine this as a requirement for election registration and voting. The Monday trial, it's going to start Monday, the 15th, tax day. There are two provisions of the election law in Georgia. One of them says absentee ballot applications cannot be pre-filled out with information about the voter. And you say, well, why would they want that to happen? Well, there are activist groups out there, including the ones that took this to court, called Vote America, the Voter Participation Center, the Center for Voter Information. Vote America, funded by the Democracy Builders Fund, whose founder, former Obama advisor Seth Andrews, was later charged with stealing funds from his own charter school network 3 years ago. So what do they want to do? They want to be able to walk into, as they did in Wisconsin, they want to walk into nursing homes where there are people there, older Americans, who tend to be less physically and mentally capable, and they want to be able to say, we'd like to register you to vote. We've filled out all of your information ahead of time. All you have to do is put your signature at the bottom, and boom, you're registered to vote. They also say that they sent applications for absentee ballots to electors in a primary election or a runoff. All of that mail, the applications only go to individuals who have not already requested or received or voted an absentee ballot. Now, a judge has already looked at part of this, and they've said that he gave summary judgment, which means he said, here's my early opinion on this, on the questions that the law was inappropriately broad, and whether or not it violated the plaintiff's freedom of association. He denied their request for summary judgment. He said, I'm not going to do that. He also says it doesn't violate your right to free speech. If the state of Georgia, in this case, and I think it would be a great law to adopt elsewhere, says you can't take a pre-filled out voter application to a person and say all you have to do is sign your name here. If that person wants to sign up to vote, I want it to be relatively easy for them to sign up to vote. What I don't want is a situation, and we know this happened in the 2020 election, where people would go to ballot harvest. They would go to nursing homes, and they would say to grandma and grandpa, maybe you remember a few months ago we got you signed up to vote. Now here's the ballot. Would you like some help filling out the ballot? And I think in many cases, you have opportunities, illicit opportunities, for people to sit down with an older American, think somebody as demented as, say, Joe Biden, and say, I'm going to help you vote. And if they say, well, who's running for president? Well, that would be that bad guy, Donald Trump, and the wonderful Joe Biden, who's produced so many good things for America. Who would you like to vote for? That is what they do to cheat on the Democrat side of the aisle. It's First Amendment Friday. Your calls are welcome at 866-439-5277. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network.
The Lars Larson Show. On the left coast. Get it? Here's Lars Larson.
I'll admit that, the idea of term limits troubled me for a long, long time, and I've explained to you why, and I'll be glad to do it again. But I'm sold on the idea now. I would love to see some term limits on Congress, although I think I'd also like to see some term limits on the federal bureaucracy. I mean, maybe even say you can't work any more than, pick a number, 12 years, 10 years in the federal bureaucracy, and then it's out. Out, go back to the private sector, and it would benefit us a bunch of different ways. But the idea of putting term limits on members of Congress, I think, is a very attractive idea. And a place that's actually doing it is the state of Tennessee. So I thought we'd talk about it with our friend Glenn Jacobs, who's mayor of Knox County, Tennessee. You might remember as well from WWE Wrestling as Kane. Mayor Jacobs, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Lars. I appreciate having me on.
Now, does it bother you when I mention the WWE, or do you remember that time fondly?
No, it's all good, man. It's part of my life and something I'm really proud of, so I actually thank you for mentioning it.
No, no worries at all. Tell me this, though. The Tennessee Senate has passed HJR 5, which is applying for a national convention to propose term limits on Congress, and it sounds like it was a pretty solid yes vote on that. Tell me what's going on and whether or not this really has the chance of making things change.
Sure. So yesterday, Tennessee joined a number of other states who are petitioning Congress for a convention to discuss, a single article convention to discuss an amendment that would term limit Congress. The House passed it last year. Big thanks to Chris Todd, who is a state rep who sponsored the bill in the House. And in the Senate, it was Richard Briggs, who happens to be my senator, and he did a remarkable job yesterday on the Senate floor arguing in favor of congressional term limits. It does have a chance. I think really what will happen is as this gains more momentum and more states sign on, eventually Congress is going to look and say, wait a second, they're serious about this. So we probably just need to go ahead and do this ourselves.
And do you see that as a possibility, Mayor Jacobs, that the Congress might say, we recognize that people are frustrated by what's going on and what's not going on in D.C., and that the Congress might just act, or will they do something halfway so they subvert this kind of effort and give you a half measure in exchange?
Yeah, sure. That's a great question. They won't do it out of interest of public service. They'll do it out of self-interest. And the fact that they realize that the states are going to do this, so they're going to do it themselves. And yeah, obviously the risk there is that they don't do exactly what they should, but nevertheless, at least you start talking about it, and then at least there can be pressure applied, and this becomes much more of the national dialogue. Amazingly, you know, almost 80% of voters support term limits. It's a bipartisan, really a nonpartisan issue. Everybody supports it. So for any elected official out there who doesn't think that term limits is a good idea, your constituents think otherwise.
Well, and in fact, I wish every single voter I happen to be a conservative Republican, but I'd love it if voters on both sides of the aisle would start asking people running for Congress. So if you go, will you commit to only staying for a limited number of terms? And I've seen that work. I've also seen it not work. I can remember a couple of examples where people ran for Congress and said, I'm only going to stay for three terms. And then they got to three terms and decided, I really like this. And they just flat out reneged on the promise, which is nasty. But that can be defeated, too, if you just say, so this is a rep who lied about his commitment to get out. But if we started demanding that kind of commitment from candidates, pending the time when they have this national convention on term limits and actually get something written into the law or written into the Constitution, do you think that we can make a difference by simply demanding of candidates, if you're not willing to commit to staying a limited time, we're not going to vote for you?
Well, that, and then also they can sign the term limit pledge at U.S. term limits, which says that they'll support this effort. So, yes, I think that both are very valid ways of going about this. And as you said, often what happens is, oh, yeah, I'm going to stay there for so long. And then, yeah, it's a pretty cool gig. So I'm going to stay a little longer. Or I'm so important because I'm on whatever committee that it would be detrimental to my district if I left, which is just an excuse. So I think you can go about it both ways, is demanding that people sign the term limits pledge, and then also that they say, hey, I'm only going to stay there for however long. As Knox County Mayor, I'm term limited. I have two terms. I'm out September 1st, 2026. I'm perfectly comfortable with that. If I can't get done what I want to get done, 8 years is how long I have total in office, I need to move on anyway. And I think that we need to demand similar out of all of our other elected officials across the country.
I think it's a great idea. The state of Oregon, I used to live in the state of Oregon, had a term limit for governor. But is the term limit two terms ever in your life, or just two terms and then you got to take one out and you could come back and run again?
Yeah, here there's actually a little controversy about that, because I interpret it as two terms, that's it. But we have had people that have come back and run again, which I don't agree with. I think that the spirit of what we did here in Knox County was two terms, and that's it. Here in Tennessee, our governor is term limited as well in Knox County, with the exception of the judges and people in the criminal justice system. Everyone in Knox County that is an elected official is term limited. And it seems to work really well. And one of the best things about it is you get new blood, you get new ideas. And yep. Often when you've been here for a while, you kind of get stagnant. And the wonderful thing about having new ideas come in is it forces you to change your perspective and think differently about things.
Well, see, Sorry, Mayor Jacobs. The other thing, lately I've been saying, but what do we do about the bureaucracy? Because there are lifers in Washington, D.C. Of course, Anthony Fauci is the worst, 41 years. But if you say, what happens when somebody just becomes a federal bureaucrat and writes rules for citizens and isn't answerable to the people? And I thought, well, let them work in government for 10 years, 12 years, and then say, now you have to leave and go to the private sector for a minimum of, or maybe you never come back. Because think about the fresh blood that would bring in. If you had somebody knowledgeable from Tennessee that went back to work in whatever federal agency, and they walked in like most people do from the private sector and go, you're doing what? And said, why don't we change the way we're doing this to make it easier for the citizens? And I don't think a lot of federal bureaucrats have that point of view, whereas people who come from the private sector tend to be, well, here's how I kept my customers happy. Why don't we do that in the federal bureaucracy?
100% agree with you. I think it speaks to a larger issue, and that's the fact that government is just too big and too powerful. And, you know, we do have a deep state apparatus. I heard you on the previous section, segment talking about FISA. You know, yep. People say, what's this? There's no deep state. That's what FISA is. Okay. It is the State Department. It is the intelligence apparatus pushing to destroy the Constitution and the Fourth Amendment. And to me, that's the real issue in the end, is the fact that you do have bureaucrats who have too much power. You have politicians who are too comfortable in their positions, and we really need to shake up all the way around.
I couldn't agree with you more, because I just think that if you'd say, we're going to give these people this power, and they promise, cross their hearts and hope to die, that they won't misuse it. Well, then if they're not being checked in some way, saying, if you ever cross the line and start surveilling people who are Americans without a good reason, you're going to be handed a pink slip if you're not willing to do that. And apparently the system is not. Mayor Jacobs, it's a pleasure to have you on. Thanks so much for what you do. And thanks for understanding term limits personally as well as professionally.
Thanks so much, Lars. I appreciate it. Have a great day.
That is Glenn Jacobs. You might remember him from WWE as the wrestling superstar Kane. He is the mayor of Knox County, Tennessee. He is term limited. He'd like to see some term limits on the United States Congress. Back in a moment, you're listening to the Lars Larson Show.
Spotify, Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, Google. Yeah, he's everywhere. The Lars Larson Podcast.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm glad to get to your phone calls and your emails at 866-HEY-LARS. Our poll on X today, Portland's art tax deadline comes Monday. Will you pay? I said, I used to live in the city of Portland. It was not in effect at that time. If Tina and I still lived in the city of Portland, I would not pay. She would not pay. we would not pay. It would be an act of civil disobedience. I think that tax in particular is a joke, much more so perhaps than a lot of other jokes that the government plays on us. Today's poll on X is found at Lars Larson Show on X. You can find it on our website as well at LarsLarson.com. It's brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at UltimateTruckService.com. To your calls now. Let's see. Oh, boy, I'm sorry, Jeff. Jeff, sorry about the long wait. Jeff's calling in listening on the Radio Northwest Network in LeGrand. How are you doing, Jeff?
Good, Lars. Multnomah County District Attorney Mike Schmidt says that he can't prosecute all the lawbreakers because of the lack of public defenders. He further claimed that recent law school graduates don't want to work as public defenders. My daughter graduated from law school in May of 2022 and immediately contacted the public defender's office in Multnomah County to see about a job. She was told they were fully staffed and didn't need any more public defenders.
Yep. The whole thing on public defenders is a scam. And I'll tell you a couple of problems I've got. One is that Oregon grants attorneys where the Constitution does not require it. And you might say, well, it's nice to give somebody an attorney when they want to be defended on various things that the Constitution doesn't cover. It might be nice. The taxpayer shouldn't be paying for it. So if they stop doing that, they'd have plenty of resources. I think this is, for the most part, a giant scam by the defense attorney industry, and it's become an industry. And I think that excuse is ridiculous because, Jeff, the DA prior to Mike Schmidt managed to prosecute cases just fine. And the DA before that managed to do it just fine. And all of a sudden, he shows up, doesn't want to prosecute people, and he finds a convenient excuse for not doing it. That's why voters should send him packing in November. Vote for Nathan Vasquez, even though Vasquez, for whatever reason, does not want to come on this program. Let's go to Jason. Hey, Jason, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind?
Hey, Lars. Flipping Friday, huh? Yeah, first in a minute. I think this attack is going to be imminent in Israel.
What attack are you talking about?
This drone and missile attack. They have so much information. They seem to know what's going to happen.
Okay, you keep referring to things that we don't know what they are. They who?
Iran and this imminent attack that's going to happen.
Oh, the possible
Israel.
Attack on Israel. But we're already well into Friday in Israel right now. It may be happening. What do you suggest we do about it?
Well, the United States is supplying, as you know, Israel with their weaponry.
About 12% of their defense budget. Hold on, Jason. Jason, make your argument match the facts. Their defense budget is $25 billion. We give them about $3 billion. So we're giving them a little over 10% of their defense budget. So everybody, I know you may be working off talking points, and that's, I guess, okay, but you should check them because I know there are people who say, well, without the United States, Israel would not exist or they wouldn't have a defense department. They do. I can't remember what the technical title for it is in Israel. The IDF is the major military in Israel. We give them about 10% of their defense budget. The rest of it, they pay for themselves.
Yeah, that's true. But I think they're way too dependent on foreign aid for their military. They need to be more
10% is way too dependent.
They need to be more self-sustaining. Russia, on the other hand, is more.
Russia gets help from China, and Russia gets help from Joe Biden because Joe Biden came in and managed to jack up the value of oil. Do you know the number one export of the country, Russia, is oil? And when Joe Biden managed to push the prices up to around $80 a barrel, Vladimir Putin was laughing all the way to the bank. So should we also cut off Russia?
Putin is showing a lot of restraint right now as after his terrorist attack. He's showing a lot more restraint than Netanyahu is willing to show.
You know, I've got problems with both sides, both Putin and with Ukraine. But when you say he's showing restraint, isn't he the guy who invaded the other country?
Yeah.
It's like if I walked into a bar and punched you in the face And then you started punching me back and said, and I said, well, I'm showing restraint here. I started the fight, but now you're beating up on me. I'm not giving him a lot of sympathy for that, are you?
Well, I don't think we need to choose sides. There's a lot of polarization going on.
Do you think it does any good if the United States sits on the fence worldwide? How do we effectively sit on the fence and say, well, we're not taking a side? Would it have been better if we didn't take a side when Germany attacked the rest of Western Europe and England? Should we have said, we're not taking sides this time? I mean, the United States has always been at least for the last 100 years, has been one of the great leaders on the planet. You'd like us to just sit on the sidelines and watch what happens and hope it doesn't hit us?
Well, a lot of times the United States gets forced into conflicts like we're getting forced into.
I agree with you about that. But all the way back to Thomas Jefferson, we've had to send people to the other side of the planet to deal with conflicts there that cause problems here. But Jason, I appreciate the call. Interesting naysayer. You're listening to First Amendment Friday on the Radio Northwest Network.
The Lars Larson Show. Welcome to First Amendment Friday on the Lars Larson Show.
Happy Friday.
Friday is for everybody.
Today, Lars puts you in the driver's seat. You talk about what you want to talk about.
Government is the problem.
No topic is off limits.
You're lying, dog-faced pony soldier.
Call 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-HEY-LARS.
Crank that speaker. Thank goodness it's Friday. Happy Friday.
This is
First Amendment Friday with Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It is First Amendment Friday. I'll get to your phone calls and emails here in just a moment. And if you want to join the best conversation in talk journalism, it's always right here. And on First Amendment Fridays, every subject is fair game. And as always, naysayers go to the head of the line at 866-439-5277. You can send your emails to talk@larslarson.com. And of course, you can always vote on our poll on X, the former Twitter poll. Portland's arts tax deadline comes due Monday. Will you pay? I know that an awful lot of people are simply not going to pay. I don't have a direct dog in the fight. I don't know the ridiculous arts tax, but if I were in that territory, I'd say, no, I'm not going to pay. And I think a lot of people would be joining me at that point. Now, from there to Washington State, in the Evergreen State, a government that is sitting on $15 billion in surplus and has absolutely no plans whatsoever to give any kind of tax relief to citizens, when even the Seattle Times Daily Dead Fish Wrapper is editorializing on that, you know there's a problem. So I'm glad to bring back to the program Elizabeth New, who's a research analyst, director of the Center for Worker Rights and Healthcare at Washington Policy Center. Elizabeth, welcome back.
Hi, thanks for having me.
You bet. What is going on when people in Olympia, state lawmakers, say we have all this extra cash and we don't intend to return one single dime to the citizens?
You know, it's aggravating, especially in a state where we're constantly hearing that our tax structure is regressive and it hurts people. In addition to increased prices for goods and services, Washingtonians are experiencing the government inflation that's created with new payroll taxes that came into being 2019 and 2023. The state has a surplus of money, as you mentioned, and it's not sharing any of it. With taxes heavy on workers' minds this week, it would be the perfect time for state lawmakers to decrease the tax burden. There have been other perfect times, like you spoke of. In 2022, the state had a $15 billion budget surplus. We still have a surplus, and inflation is at record highs. And they ignored a bill from a Democrat to provide a sales tax reduction of 1%. It didn't even receive a hearing, and also that year, Governor Inslee said that he would be surprised if the revenue forecast was ever of such a dimension and the surplus was ever enough to equal tax relief for Washingtonians.
Do you know what I'm curious about?
It looks like they're not going to do it.
Elizabeth, do you know how much in total do they get from the sales tax statewide? Do you happen to know?
It's 6.5%. The state rate, and then localities can add to it.
Right. I'm just curious what it would cost out of that $15 billion surplus to knock 1% off or knock 2% off. And in fact, I'd even go with the conservative argument, because I've seen it work that if they cut the tax rate and told citizens, hey, guess what? We just cut the sales tax rate. You can now buy stuff and not pay as big a tax to the state. You might actually see more sales and the revenue might not go down. It might actually go up. I've actually seen examples where that happens, where they've cut taxes and people buy more stuff in Washington State and they don't buy it elsewhere and they end up with the same amount of money in Olympia. But they're apparently not willing to do that.
That's interesting. You know, the Tax Foundation just reported in March that those states who have cut broad-based taxes and given some tax relief in recent years, either via income or other ways, they have seen that tax revenue has risen more in those states than it did in the states that didn't cut taxes. So it reports that 27 states that cut the rate of a major tax, an individual income tax, a corporate income, or sales tax, experienced a 9.8% tax revenue increase in real terms. And the states that didn't cut any taxes did not. They saw did not as much. They saw revenues grow by 6.2%. So the tax-cutting states, you're right, they grew faster than the ones with lower rates.
Yeah, I just remember years ago, I don't smoke as many cigars anymore as I used to, but there was a crazy tax in Oregon that was, what was it? I think it was 50%. Well, if you're buying a 50-cent cigar, then the tax is 25 cents. But if you're buying a $10 cigar or a $20 cigar, the tax could literally be as high as 10 bucks. And they stuck with that forever. And then finally, there was a lawmaker who said, why don't you cut this tax to make it 50 cents as the maximum? So no matter what cigar you're buying, you can pay, it was a percentage up to 50 cents. The minute they did that, if I recall correctly, their revenues either doubled or tripled. Because they found a whole bunch of people were simply going out of state to buy their cigars, and they went back to buying them in the state, and the state actually made a gigantic windfall by cutting taxes. But getting Democrats to ever understand that is probably not likely.
That makes so much sense, you know, and it's not good for our state to have a surplus, as our state does. We don't have the best track record when it comes to living within its means. Instead, Washington state leaders show a fondness for tax increases so it can grow the government's role and live outside of previous means. Right now, we have more social programs being added via payroll tax, and I don't know when it's going to stop.
By the way, one of the things that occurs to me is there's a time bomb hidden in all of this. Because correct me if I'm wrong, but my experience with the government is when they have extra money, they don't say, well, let's go out and do this one thing that we need to do. Let's pay a debt down to zero, say some bonded debt they have. Or let's go out and do some projects that are one-time only money, which actually way back when for Oregon was the idea of before they went to the online lottery and they had the the pull tabs or whatever, they said we're only going to use it for one time only. So if they had a piece of land that they wanted to be developed and they said but it needs water, sewer, power and sidewalks and roads, they'd go in and pay for that. It meant if they spent the money this year and then the money went away next year, they still had something to show for it. But what governments tend to do is they say, let's start a new program. Let's hire 100 new workers. Well, when the money then goes away next year or the year after that, and you're not getting that kind of revenue anymore, you don't have a surplus, you say, but we have all these workers, and we're going to have to lay them off. So if they spend it on one-time things, I'm kind of curious how much bonded debt the state of Washington has, where they could go out and say, you know, let's take $5 billion of that and use it to pay debts down to zero, that the government owes already. And that will effectively forgive future taxpayers of the burden of paying those debts off.
Those are really good points. You know, we have a habit of creating things that need to be sustained. You know, you've got all these school districts right now, and we're crying about cuts. But what happened is they used one-time COVID dollars in a lot of instances, and they didn't have money to sustain the things that they added or that they replaced. And it's not sustainable to keep adding new programs instead of using one-time money for one-time things. You know, you see that with tolls proposed in Portland as well. Tolls used to need to build something new. And I get that. User taxes are important, I think.
Absolutely. That's Elizabeth New. She's a research analyst and director of the Center for Worker Rights and Healthcare at Washington Policy. Elizabeth, thanks for the time. When we come back, I want to talk about the way one of America's really nasty anti-gun types got shown up by an immigrant who told him what it was all.
In a rocky political climate, he's the steamroller. This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. I want to tell you about a little exchange that happened between David Hogg. Now, David Hogg is a guy who tries to hog the spotlight when it comes to being anti-gun. He came out of the really terrible tragedy at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida, and decided to make himself into a gun control guy, a gun grabber. He's in favor of all the new laws about guns. Well, he was holding a town hall meeting, a debate in New Hampshire, and a young lady by the name of Lily Tang Williams, who was actually born in communist China, and she emigrated to the United States almost 40 years ago. Listen to how she described her own background and how it colors this debate.
Hi, my name is Lily Tang Williams. Welcome to my live free or die state. Actually, I am a Chinese immigrant who survived communism. And under Mao, 40 million people were starving to death after he sold communism to them. And 20 million people died, murdered during his Cultural Revolution.
Now, she went on to explain to this David Hogg, who's never seen a gun law he didn't love, why it was such a bad idea then for Americans to give up their gun rights because of all this legislation that's pushed by people like David Hogg and Joe Biden and the rest, because they want Americans to be restricted from owning guns. And Lily Tang Williams has a real point of view, a personal point of view on why that's such a bad idea.
So my question to you, David, is that can you guarantee me, a gun owner tonight, our government in the U.S., in D.C., will never, never become a tyrannical government? Can you guarantee that to me?
There's no way I can ever guarantee that any government will not be tyrannical.
Well, then the debate on gun control is over because I will never give up my guns. Never, never. And you should go to China to see how gun control works for dictatorship of CCP.
Yeah, and I think that'd be a great idea if David Hogg could actually see what happens when you disarm an entire population. History is replete with examples where people have given up their guns and the end result is never good for them, always bad for the other side. Let's go to JC, who's a naysayer. Hey, JC, welcome to the program. What do you and I disagree about today that makes you a naysayer on First Amendment Friday?
Yes, Lars, thank you for taking my call. I didn't get a chance to vote in your Twitter poll yesterday on the debate whether Biden should debate Trump. I think Biden should debate Trump. Sure. And the location that Biden should pick would probably be, I'd probably say Biden should pick Lovelock Correctional Institution in Nevada and probably pick the same jail cell that O.J. Simpson sat in and put Trump in that and then debate him. That would be awesome.
Oh, so you want the President of the United States to take a man without trial, without due process, and just throw him in federal prison?
No, not yet. He's going to end
up. Isn't that what you just said? Isn't that what you just said?
I said debate him. I didn't say lock him up yet.
But well, then why do it behind prison walls? We put people behind prison walls who've done something wrong.
Trump said whenever and wherever. That is wherever.
Well, it is, but I'm wondering what message do you think you would send to Americans if two presidential candidates held a debate behind the walls of a prison? What do you see in that? Because I don't see anything good about that.
I don't see anything good in either one of them, Lars, so let's just go
really?
There.
Really? Who are you going to vote for?
Yes. I'm not going to vote for those two idiots, for sure.
Well, hold on. So, I didn't ask you that. I said, who are you going to vote for?
I don't think it's none of your business, for one thing.
Why not? I can ask any question I want. You can tell me you're ashamed of who you're going to vote for, which you effectively just did.
I can answer any way I want to, right?
Okay, but why wouldn't you want to tell people where you stand on the issues?
What issue?
Well, there are 100 of them. Let's start with this. Are you happy with the current performance of Joe Biden?
No, but, you know, 4 years ago...
Were you happy with the performance? Did Donald Trump's 4 years in office... Did Donald Trump's... Did Donald Trump's...
Let me finish.
What's the question?
No, I'm answering your question. I said 4 years ago we were standing in line fighting for bread and toilet paper and waiting hours...
Where were we fighting for toilet paper? You mean because during the pandemic, there was a supply chain crisis that was badly managed by the Biden administration?
I think that was Trump that was in office about 4 years ago about this time, Lars, if you remember.
Yeah, but for the toilet paper, the supply chain shortages really began.
No, Lars.
You can pick your opinions, you can't pick your facts.
You're trying to twist it around, and you know the facts.
No, I'm telling you.
I hate to call your show the Lion Larson Show, so please
don't.
You can
call it whatever you want to call it. I don't care.
Thank you.
But tell me this. You haven't told me yet who you're going to vote for or why you don't want to say.
I told you. It's none of your business. I'm not going to vote for those two guys, and I think that's enough.
You're going to cast your vote for somebody who won't be the president. Why would you throw your vote away?
It's not throwing your vote. That's one thing.
If you vote for somebody who can't win, hold on, JC, let me finish. JC, I do want to ask the question. JC, if you vote for somebody who can't win, and it's going to be either Trump or Biden, I believe it's going to be Trump. If you vote for somebody who can't win, that's throwing your vote away, isn't it?
No, it's not. It's not throwing your vote away.
What do you achieve, JC? What do you achieve by voting for somebody who can't win?
It's my vote, and it's my right, and it's my choice.
I get all that, but I just ask you, what?
Then I don't know where you're going with this, because that's all I'm going to say.
I'm asking you, if you cast a vote for Mickey Mouse or Donald Duck or whoever you cast the vote for, you're throwing
it
away.
I've already voted for them, so I can't.
Okay, very good. He's just trying to be silly now. I appreciate the call, though. 866, hey, Lars. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. That's the part I find kind of crazy about all of this, is you've got people who find themselves, they can't vote for Joe Biden. They understand the guy is demented. He is suffering from old age, for the most part, could be dementia, could be Alzheimer's. We don't know. And we know that all he's going to say is he's glad that he was seen as an elderly man with a poor memory, because it meant that nobody was going to refer him for criminal charges for his theft of classified documents. On the other hand, he doesn't want to be seen by Americans as a demented old man who doesn't have any ability to be president, because that's bad for him too, and he can't really have it both ways. In any case, 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And if you've got a moment, vote in our poll on X. Let me grab this. Chris, welcome to the program. We're close to the break, so what point do you want to make on a First Amendment Friday?
I'll make it quick, Lars. I would just wanted to make a comment on some of the naysayers that call in. It seems like they just want to talk over you and argue. Is it more like clickbait, or they want to hear their own voice? Because I haven't heard a good debate, to be honest with you. And it seems to be on the regular with some of the naysayers. They just want to call and just argue, and their points, I can't figure out what their points are. And like you, I like a good constructive argument.
Yeah.
It's really hard to get them, and I'm not understanding why, to be honest with you.
I'm confused at times too, Chris, because I'll get a guy like that and he might say, no, Joe Biden's been great and Donald Trump is awful. Okay. Or Donald Trump is awful and Joe Biden, whatever. Who are you going to vote for? And then you say, I called an opinion show, but I don't have an opinion on who ought to be the next president. That's kind of crazy.
The Lars Larson Show.
wise words from President Reagan.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us. We the people are the driver. The government is the car. And we decide where it should go.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. As you may know, we've made a lot of mention of the fact that among those millions and millions of illegal aliens sneaking across America's borders are a kind of a notable number of Chinese nationals. And we've wondered about what exactly is going on there. We've got a few theories, but theories only. So I thought we'd talk about it with Laura Reese, who's a senior research fellow for Homeland Security at the Heritage Foundation, former acting deputy chief of staff for the Department of Homeland Security. Ms. Reese, welcome back.
Thank you for having me on, Mark.
Why are those Chinese communist nationals coming across our border? Is there a particular reason or just a happy coincidence?
Well, they will tell you they're coming for a better life or for economic reasons or that they will apply for asylum. Now, mind you, simply coming for a job is not grounds for asylum. Nope. If you're going to be eligible for asylum, you have to have been persecuted or face future persecution on your religion or nationality or political opinion, et cetera. And, you know, certainly the Chinese Communist Party is oppressive and does persecute certain populations within China, Uyghurs being one prime example. But what is so notable right now has been the drastic jump in numbers of Chinese nationals who've been crossing the border. So before Biden, in a month, you could count on one hand the number of Chinese that the Border Patrol would encounter. Now that has jumped to 4,000 a month, 5,000 a month. Just in the first 6 months of this fiscal year, there's been over 24,000 Chinese nationals encountered by Border Patrol. That doesn't even account for other ports of entry in the northern border, et cetera. And the vast majority of these, 85% or more, are single adults, and most of them are male. And so, you know, the question is why, what is going on? And we can't just take their word for it that they're coming for a job or for asylum when the CCP knows when people leave China. They certainly know when this many people leave China. We have to assume that this is coordinated by Beijing.
Well, see, Laura, now you got to the point that I was asking about. And sometimes I ask dumb questions. Feel free to tell me this one's a dumb one. But as I understand, a lot of them are flying into, I think, Ecuador. There's some visa, you know, loophole that allows them to do that. And then they make their way all the way from Ecuador up north. If that doesn't match the facts, please tell me. But I wondered, well, you know, the Chinese government knows these people are leaving, or they've managed to somehow sneak out of China, a very controlling country, into some friendly country where they then take a stack of cash and buy an airline ticket all the way to South America. How is all this happening without the notice of the folks in Beijing? Or is it happening with the notice of the folks in Beijing? Could you pull off that many people exiting that country without the government either being involved or knowing what's going on?
No, Beijing is very controlling. They know who's coming and going and typically why. And so that's why we have to assume that this is coordinated, that Beijing is sending many of them. And particularly when they're single adults, male, you know, military age, at the same time that China has been sending weather balloons over our military bases, buying land in the U.S. near military bases, their constant intellectual property theft, and sending equipment that spies on and vacuums up our data, whether it's TikTok or other types of equipment.
Or cranes at ports of entry.
Exactly, exactly. When you look at all of that, we cannot say, but the border and the numbers coming from China, that's an exception. That just doesn't make logical sense. And also, you have to keep in mind, Joe Biden has taken, and his family has taken money from China, and is vulnerable when it comes to China. And so we have got to prepare for and counter whatever China may be planning by using these people who are coming here.
Now, Laura, I follow a rule that says everything is easy as long as you don't have to do it. So I'm going to ask you, shouldn't it be easy for Homeland Security to, I mean, since they seem to be able to find out anything they want about American citizens, can we find out who's buying the airline tickets? You know, where, if they're flying into Ecuador, do we know what they're flying, where they're flying out of? Because that would tell you if they're flying out of some Chinese airport to Ecuador, and that means it's being done with the acquiescence of the Chinese government. And as you say, this isn't going without Beijing's notice. So, and then find out what's happening to these people once they come here, or is Homeland Security just ignoring all of this? Do we know?
Well, I have to hope that the intel staff among DHS and the rest of the community know the travel patterns and what's going on, but they certainly don't discuss it. And you know, like everything else, border wise and even China wise, with this Biden administration, they just have their head in the sand and act like it's not a problem. But I mean, given that the numbers that have come in, what are they waiting for? We need to act on this. And unfortunately, Congress had incredible leverage over this administration when it was considering the appropriations bills and defunding a lot of this nonsense to secure the border, et cetera. But Congress fully funded DHS, losing all their leverage against the Biden administration. So this is going to continue through at least January 19th.
Now, again, feel free to tell me I'm being goofy, but a lot of us have looked at these videos, as you say, young fighting age males, not a lot of females, almost no children. They all seem to be dressed alike. They have what I would take in America. I would say that's a military haircut on that young man or woman. Usually on young men, it's easier to tell that guy's in the Marines, you know, or he just chooses to have a Marine style haircut. Even their gear, even the clothing they're wearing, seems to be not a uniform, but close enough in the civilian version that it looks like they're all part of one group. Have you noticed the same thing, or am I just, you know, barking up the wrong tree?
No, they do seem to be clothed and equipped well and similarly, and they seem to be taking, for those that do go through perhaps the Darien Gap, different routes than the rest of the migrants working their way towards the U.S. Easier, faster, safer routes, which again would point to coordination by the Chinese Communist Party or, you know, some third party. But why would this nationality be getting, you know, their own route, safer route? So, Seem to point towards a very coordinated effort.
I mean, because, Laura, you've got people who live in South America who might actually be somewhat familiar. And then we're asked to believe that this Chinese national who's fleeing persecution, fleeing his own government, has flown to the other side of the planet and just seems to know the fastest route from South America through the Darien Gap and all the way to the U.S. border, the faster, better, you know, quicker, safer way to go. And he knows this how. And I know the NGOs play a role in this. Laura, thanks for the work you do at Heritage. We always appreciate your time, especially on a Friday.
Thank you, Lars.
You bet. That's Laura Reese, Senior Research Fellow for Homeland Security at Heritage, former Acting Deputy Chief of Staff at the Department of Homeland Security. It's a First Amendment Friday. Your calls are welcome at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And you're listening to The Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network.
listen for 5 minutes. You'll feel better. More with Lars Larson right now.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you on First Amendment Friday, and we're live on the Radio Northwest Network. That's a network that's been around for a quarter century. It serves the Pacific Northwest states, Oregon, Washington, and Idaho. And this segment is brought to you by the home power generating folks at ProTech Power. Make sure your loved ones are safe when the power goes out. Call 541-ONAGEN. That's 541-ONAGEN. Don is an ace here. Don, what do you and I disagree about today?
Hey, the last segment, you said that it would be throwing away your vote to not vote for one of the Republican or Democratic Party frontrunners.
I'd frame it as to vote for somebody that you know is not going to win. I'd ask, what message are you trying to get across by doing that? And if you're not getting a message across, then what purpose does the vote serve?
Yes, well, I would be trying to get a message across. It would be a protest vote against the two-party system, or at least the two-party candidates.
And what good does it do?
Well, then the tabulation occurs, and there's going to be less votes for those people.
And does that change? Does it? No, but what does it accomplish? Does it change anything?
I don't think that the votes are going to change anything, but I don't think that.
Well, then what if you say it's not going to change anything, Don? What does it accomplish? Because then it does meet the definition of throwing your vote away. If you say I'm going to vote for some candidate, not Kennedy, not Biden, not Trump, I'm going to vote for somebody else, and you say, okay, what did you accomplish by doing that? Could you tell me what that accomplishes?
Tallying and lodging dissent.
Okay, very good. So you're in the tally. Let me go to Fred, who's been waiting for way too long. Hey, Fred, welcome to the Radio Northwest Network. What's on your mind?
Well, what's on my mind is we passed a law to allow the lottery to fund our schools, but then they put it into a rainy day fund that they never use. But now they're threatening to close down one of the districts in our school.
Actually,
and
in Oregon,
I use that rainy day fund. How
Fred,
much money is in that rainy day fund, and why don't they use it? What do we got to do? The criteria.
You're starting with a false premise to begin with. There is no such thing as a rainy day fund. Number one. Number two, the money is spent by the state. It's about $900 million a year. It was never dedicated to schools. They said you could spend some of the money on schools and some on parks and some on a bunch of things. That was all written into the law. Now, you could say, well, I disagree with that. What would you accomplish if you could spend all the lottery proceeds in, say, the state of Oregon on the schools? What would you accomplish?
No, it's a percentage that they were saying that they was going to give, just like it was the marijuana funds, and they used the marijuana funds, they put it into it, but they also deduct what they put in on the marijuana taxes from the general fund of the schools. They've already admitted doing that.
Well, except...
So how are we supposed to fund these schools that are getting these extra programs when they don't use them?
Fred...
They deduct the money they put in.
Fred, some of the lottery money does go to the schools, but it's only $900 million. It's about, if you put all the lottery dollars into the schools, it'd be about 12% of what the state funds in school funding, and that doesn't account for county and other funding that goes into it. It doesn't make a big bunch of difference. Were you thinking that somehow the lottery was going to pay for schools? Because the schools have lots of money right now. The schools are spending on the order of $18,000 per student per year. Should that be enough to fund education?
Well, it should be enough to fund education and maintain the buildings.
Yeah, well,
they're running the buildings into the ground and
abandoned
levees.
I agree with you.
But they're not maintaining or using the funding.
They're not spending it on
the news.
What
it was going into the rainy day fund. The lottery
there
fund
is
went
no,
into the rainy day
Fred,
fund for schools.
There is no rainy day fund. Where did you get the idea there's a rainy day fund?
On the mainstream media.
No, I don't think so. Send me the link. I'll be glad to take a look at it. But people have proposed a rainy day fund. There is a thing called the emergency fund, which has been around for a long time. In fact, I think the emergency fund predates the lottery altogether. But I appreciate the call. Let's go to John. Hey, John, welcome to the Radio Northwest Network. What's on your mind?
Good afternoon, Lars. Unfortunately, talk about the public defenders have been through the system. I believe in the system. I think it can work and it should work. for whatever choices you make, you have to pay the consequences. The problem is after going through the system, you see the public defenders, which by and large, I don't know what they get paid now.
A lot.
It's like $700 a case. Yeah, yep. Well, I don't know how much it is for sure. But as a public defender, they take these plea bargains and get as many as they can. They make more money. It's a cash cow that way. Now, you can't take your time. Now, I'll give you one quick example. When, unfortunately, the charges that I was on, I went to Mr. Des O'Connell. If you remember him from Portland,
he was the Des O'Connell, famous defense attorney. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Except he was a prosecuting attorney for 20 years. And meeting the gentleman, he's like, "Well, I'm the prosecuting attorney," and I'm like, "Well, why would he switch? If you think people are terrible and they do terrible things, don't exactly." So
I have
they
one,
end up going to one side. Yeah.
Well, except here's what happens. You work as an ADA for a while, assistant district attorney, and then you decide you want to make real money. You go to the defense side and you make big money. The people who are DAs don't make as much. They make a fraction of what the private sector makes. So a lot of them will leave the DA's office with a lot of knowledge about how the system works, and they'll put it to work keeping criminals on the streets, and they make a pile of money. I mean, that's basically the motivation is, I want to make more money. And if you can do it by keeping criminals on the streets, then that's what they do. John, I appreciate the call. You got the Lars Larson Show.
The Lars Larson Show.